Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to the Bob Clark Creepy Christmas Spooktacular! Hosted by Nightmare on Film Street, I'm John.
I'm Kim.
And we're here this holiday season to talk about two Christmas kinda horror movies from Uncle Bob.
Okay, we just wanted to talk about Black Christmas again, and we knew that Bob Clark had a couple other horror movies in his arsenal, and we picked this one, which is called Death Dream, or Dead of Night?
Dead of Night. I had never heard of this movie referred to as Dead of Night until last night.
Until the title card came up.
I'd always known it as Death Dream. I'd never seen it. But more importantly than that, this is a true Christmas spooktacular. Obviously, we're talking about film here. We're celebrating some holiday horrors, whether or not they're set on Christmas. But beyond that, we've got musical numbers. We've got cocktail pairings. And we're kicking it off with a little song from Pi Kappa Sigma's Billy. Take it away, old boy. Thank you very much, Billy. That's right. It's a true variety show filled with tons of segments that don't really fit in the ultimate theme. Now, I know what you're thinking. Death Dream is not a Christmas movie. Obviously, Black Christmas is. It's in the title. We're all watching it every year. But despite being a horror movie about Vietnam, isn't this ultimately just a creepy, haunting little tale about a boy who's gonna come home for the holidays?
Sure.
Yeah, he's gonna be home for Christmas. Death's not gonna stop him. Bullets aren't gonna stop him. The only thing in his way are some fucking family members that are willing to let him murder people, even though he should probably be put 6 feet in the ground.
And you know what? I think also thematically, as a precursor to Black Christmas, we've got, you know, unhinged gentlemen, rocking chairs.
Yeah.
There are some matching vibes. These are a good double feature.
I love, we saw one scene with a rocking chair and Kim was just like, we're geniuses. We did it. These two movies fit so well together.
We've done it again. Fun fact, this was actually filmed during Christmas in Florida.
There you go.
And they had a real hard time trying to get the shots they needed, especially like in the graveyard and stuff, without Christmas lights in the background.
That's hysterical. It's like Halloween, trying to hide a palm tree. They're trying to hide Christmas trees, I guess.
And they're like, no.
There are so many exterior shots in this movie that I'm sure it was a pain in the ass to try and hide, you know, little blow-up molds of Santa and some snowmen. But there you go. Bleeds right through. Even though there is not a shred of Christmas in this movie, you feel it in your bones.
It's about a family coming together, like
right?
You said.
Exactly.
There's holiday vibes at its core.
Sure, and which has to be good thing number one. if we're going to list three good things about Death Dream, number one, we're faking a Christmas vibe, you know? It's a family story. It's a perfect family story to watch around Christmas. We've just finished Die Hard. What are we going to watch next? Obviously, Bob Clark's Death Dream. Good thing number two.
It's 90 minutes.
Okay. Kim loves a 90-minute movie. I think we all love a 90-minute movie.
I love a 90-minute movie. We paused it for some reason. I can't remember. I wanted popcorn.
Yeah.
And there was only a half hour left. I was like, wow, we're fucking doing it. We've done it.
Good thing number three, the finale of this movie, the climax, and also the greatest horror image that comes out of this entire fucking movie. You've probably seen it before. I've seen it plastered on Shudder all the fucking time. It takes place at a drive-in. Very hard to find horror movies that are set at drive-ins entirely. There's not a whole lot you can do there, but I love it. Anytime that a climax of a movie is set at a drive-in, and it almost made me sad we weren't pairing this with Targets or even with that John Waters movie, Cecil B. Demented, but we'll get to those movies someday. Blood Rage.
What's that Strange at the Drive-In weird movie we watched? That
Dead
Australian
End Drive-In
one.
Dead End Drive. That one's set entirely at a drive-in,
and it's very weird.
They really pulled some strings to make that that drive-in its own little city. Like even there's
like Mad Max at the drive-in.
Yeah, even they were just like, we can't do a whole movie at the drive-in. This is absurd. But those are three good things about Dead of Night / Death Dream. I'm calling it Death Dream from now on. I'm not calling it Dead of Night.
We need to talk about the title because I don't get it.
Okay, well, Dead of Night maybe sounds a little better if we're trying to make it a Christmas movie. Death Dream, much better title. Much better title.
Thematically, if you were to pluck this from a shelf at a video rental store,
What
are you expecting when you pick up a Death Dream? You're expecting a dream, or some dreams, or dreams in general.
What Kim is failing to realize here is that this is about the death of the American dream.
Oh,
right,
God.
Right. And like, what is the American dream but a collective daydream we all continue to have, even us in Canada? I mean, like, the North America is founded on that dream. And there's nothing like a world war that will just slaughter an entire generation of young people that'll make you go, maybe this was all for naught.
Okay, all right. You're winning me over, I guess. I was thinking of it in context of, without spoiling the whole movie, because I know we're still up at the top, but in the Carnival of Souls kind of way, where like, this is, taking it back to Christmas, Family Man, like, where he's like, this is a glimpse, where we're just seeing an alternate reality in which, you know, little Timmy comes home.
Okay.
It's a death dream.
It doesn't quite exist. It's hard to say whether or not he's even real, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And what are you expecting when you pull Dead of Night off the shelf? You've seen that fucking spine. It's got maybe like a cool-ass ghoul face on it. Dead of Night. What do you...
Potential vampire? Which potentially might be true.
This movie
potential.
That should have been one of our good things. This is like beyond being a story about the horrors of war and about zombies.
Potentially.
This is maybe also one of the strangest vampire-ish stories that came out of the 70s, for sure. Can't wait to talk about that, and we'll be back in a minute to get in full detail about Uncle Bob's Death Dream.
Stay tuned.
Dead of Night, the story of one night in a small town that changed the lives of many and ended the lives of some. As night fell, something evil descended upon the town. Something corrupt, unspeakable. Behind their drawn curtains, they waited as fear walked. In the dead of night.
Hello, this is the police department. Please identify yourself.
Hey, soldier, where you headed? Come on, hop aboard.
What does it say, Daddy?
Dandy.
Oh, God. Oh.
He's home.
Andy.
I didn't know Andy was home.
Is that Andy?
Joanne doesn't even know he's home yet. She'll be so surprised.
But Andy wouldn't kill anybody.
Academy Award winners John Marley and Lynn Carter.
Death Dream is currently sitting at a 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb, 85% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 3.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
The thing that surprised me the most about this movie, you know, I was expecting, this is 74, pre-Black Christmas. I don't know how much ahead of Black Christmas it came out.
Not very much.
I was expecting it to be, you know, like a little bit of a slow burn, and I wasn't necessarily expecting it to be scary. And I don't know if scary is the word I would use for it, but I don't think I've been more unsettled by a movie in a very long time. This movie made me very uncomfortable.
It was specifically one scene, though.
No,
right?
there were several scenes that made me really uncomfortable. This movie is just uncomfortable.
Okay, so I don't want to walk away from that thought too much, so I'm just going to give us a quick little TLDR to get us up to the spot that kind of fucked Kim up for the whole year, I think.
Like, it ruined me for the rest of 2023.
If we're putting together a list of scenes that fucked me up this year, this is truly the number one with a bullet for Kim. So in the beginning of the movie, we are in Vietnam. We're watching a soldier witness the death of his best friend named Darren. He, while shocked by the horror of it all, also gets shot, where we get the opening credits. We cut to a family in the middle of nowhere America. I think it's supposed to be Massachusetts. Apparently, according to Kim, it's Florida, which makes sense. There's lots of frogs everywhere. Like, at night, just like... those classic Christmas sounds.
And Spanish moss on the trees.
Spanish moss on the trees, baby. They get a letter from a local military rep, basically telling them that their son has died. They're all shocked. They're all agonizing over that news.
Okay, but let's not gloss over that was maybe one of the first uncomfortable scenes, just because it was played very straight.
Yeah.
It was slow. You felt the awkwardness of the military official kind of knowing this family
personally, yeah,
and having to reveal that information. He doesn't tell them. They kind of know, but they don't know.
Because he's a fucking coward.
Oh, there's that weird, like, the women step back, but then they're like, what does it say? But they kind of already know, and it's just, the weight of the scene is very, very heavy, and
yeah,
we're so early on into the movie that I'm like, oh, that's what this is going to be.
This is
where we are right now. I have to emotionally pack up my bags and get them ready.
These characters are all very good. Like, and then they're all played really well. Dad's played by John Marley, who's not an actor that I'm like super duper familiar with, but I think everybody out there will also recognize him as the guy who finds a horse's head in his bed in The Godfather. And he's kind of great in this. Everybody in this movie's great. They're all a little cartoonish, but the situation that they're going through is obviously wild and weird, and it's sort of Tales from the Crypty. But yeah, like his reaction to reading that letter and not having the strength necessarily to say it out loud to them, even though they already know the news, like that whole scene's great. It's unfortunately a very honest, real to life depiction of just like grief and like the news of grief. Like, oh, your entire day and your life is fucked up right now. That sucks. If anybody's a big fan of the last four episodes of Succession, you're gonna love the first 5 minutes of this movie.
The moment that really got me was after Dad had read the letter and he started breaking down, and the daughter was telling the dad, like she was like, no, stop, don't do that, because I don't think she had ever seen her dad break down before.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's real because Dad is emotionally reacting
right,
to it. Like,
yeah.
There were so many levels of grief and reaction that, like, as somebody who's experienced grief and very, like, surprising sudden grief, there's a complete span of reactions. There's nothing that's typical. Your brain just doesn't process it the same every time.
No. But
moment to moment.
But before the morning comes, there's a sound in the house and everybody's awoken by it. And Dad goes, fetches his gun. And this is how you know it's a real American story, and goes investigating what the sound is. And at first he thinks it's the dog. Like, oh, the fucking dog got in the house. Dog's supposed to be outside. Which is absurd. Dogs should...
That was a little dog.
That was a tiny dog. Dogs,
I mean,
like that,
Florida,
should sleep at the foot of your bed. It's. I guess it's Florida.
Like, the weather is decent.
You could sleep outside at night in December if you wanted to, which is obviously when this movie's set. And before they're ready to turn around and go back up to bed, they see a haunting image of their son just standing in the darkness at
with
the end of the hallway.
Teeth glowing like a fucking nightmare.
The creepiest fucking smile in the fucking world. He's like the chauffeur in Burnt Offerings, if that's
yes.
a deep cut reference anybody gets.
Oh, fuck
gets.
Yes.
Yeah, just like a smile that you should not trust. And, you know, also the
and
fact
behind
that-
a door. Who stands behind a door?
But the really great thing about all of that is that if you were a stranger who walked into this scene, you go, that boy's got the devil in him. But because you're a family who hasn't seen their son in months, he's been in Vietnam, he's stopped writing letters, they haven't heard from him in 2 months, they've just found out that very night that he's dead, and they're elated that he's back, that he's alive. So they really push down all of that common sense that this boy's creepy smile and his awkward laugh and his haunting stare is just totally normal for somebody coming home from the war.
Yeah, it's all, you know, we have to give them allowances to be able to breathe and reacclimate into their world.
Yeah. They try to do that for like 30 seconds.
Yeah,
and after that, they're like, why are you so fucking weird?
Well, no, but when they sit him down at the table and they're like, go fetch him some tea. And they're like, how was it? How are you doing, son? And he just doesn't answer. And then he just gives them like creepy smile and
yeah.
says something weird. And then the fucking scene that made me so uncomfortable was just them all laughing at how fucking weird he's being.
Yeah.
About being like, I died.
Yeah, he laughs awkwardly, he stares at them with a smile, and then they all just keep laughing and laughing and laughing, and the camera's all zoomed in on them, and we pull out through the window and off into the fucking front lawn.
It's so
like,
weird.
Oh, man.
Like, because it's like this weird mix of like elation on top of what was grief, which, and it's also masking his odd behavior. There's so many emotions in that laughter, it's maniacal.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in their fucking teeth with the camera.
Yeah, we stay there for so fucking
so
long.
Uncomfortable.
Like,
so uncomfortable.
Like how at some point you're like, they gotta hang up the phone while they're talking to Billy in Black Christmas. You're like, this phone call's going on way too long. That's what this smile and this laughter is like.
Yeah, this movie is 90 minutes. There was 10 minutes of that laughing
yeah.
scene.
Bob Clark's really just like, nah, let's push it. Let's just keep going. Let's fucking rock with this.
I do really enjoy the pacing of the movie. And the same with Black Christmas is it's pre kind of the formulaic slasher,
mm-hmm.
Because it's one of the very early, if not the first,
yep.
in that we're not doing too much and we let scenes linger and we explore the emotions of people reacting to the things that happen. And
yeah.
in this, like, all in terms of deaths, we have like the dog. The doctor, like,
yeah,
we...
heads up, everybody. This beautiful, wonderful family Christmas story has a dead dog in it,
and you know, it's not great. But this movie is 90 minutes, and not a lot happens, but I'm totally cool with it.
Yeah, right. Like that's some movies in the 70s really had a way of stretching out that feeling, and part of it just comes down to having a good story with good characters. That's all it is. Like, you'll watch anything as long as you find it compelling.
Yeah, and I think there's something really cool about this because we're not given a lot of answers, and a lot of the film is like this weird uncanny feeling that we know
mm-hmm.
he's come back and he's not right.
Yes.
And we just have to sit with him in these scenes. And like, dad's starting to realize that something's not right with the boy, but mom is just full denial.
Yeah.
Active denial. Like, she Absolutely. Knows, but she refuses. Like, she shut it down.
Yeah. She's like, no, I don't have time to worry about that. I've got to go make lunch.
She's like, my boy's back and I love him.
Mom's fucking off the deep end from the beginning of this movie, though. And like, clearly, I think mom knows he's dead before we get the news, because she's like, it's her voiceover that we hear in the very beginning. Like, over
But it's weird.
She's like, it's okay, Dan. Andy, you're gonna come home. I love you. You're gonna come home. I know you can hear me. It's totally fine. Like, they're saying grace.
She's
for
fucking
dinner.
Like, she's making rituals out of her nightly prayer.
Yeah.
She's casting spells.
She doesn't realize she's a witch.
Yeah.
100%.
Her desperation brought this boy back.
She totally pricked her finger and put a drop of blood into an apple pie, and that's why he's home. Right? That's the other cool thing about the movie, is that we don't have a moment where somebody makes a bargain with the devil, or somebody does voodoo, or there's any sort of supernatural bargain that gets exchanged in order for Andy to come home. And I love that he shows up immediately after they find out he's dead. That's the other thing about, like, the grief part of the movie, too, right? Like, you're in that weird pit where you're just like, no, there's gotta be a... This has to be wrong.
You're trying to reason with it, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's gotta be a way we can fix this. Like, anytime you get bad news about anything, like, even if it's just like, hey, guess what? You're in fucking debt now.
Yeah.
You're like,
how do we control Zed this?
How do we control Zed this? What's the action plan to get back to where we were? And there isn't one when someone dies. Like, that's not possible. It's the one thing you can't change.
Oh, man.
It fucks you up.
I had that feeling for like 2 months when my dad passed away. Like, I figured, like, if I could just figure out medically what happened, like, it didn't happen, I could undo it. It was a weird place for my brain to be.
Yeah. But then, so that's why it's always reasonable or fitting to have a scene where you've got somebody who, like, meets a witch or meets the devil, and then they strike a bargain, and then you can do that. Because it's tapping into the vulnerability and the susceptibility of a person at that time.
Yeah, well, and if your want and yearning could be this tangible thing, like, if the energy you harnessed into wanting something actually had the ability to make change, it would bring boys back from the war.
Yeah, and so, like, that's the other question, is whether or not he's back home because they want him that bad, or because he's not willing to go.
Because he hasn't died in his own...
Yeah, like, it's such a... unimaginable thing for him to have died for his country in a war that he didn't want to fight, that there's like, oh no, surely I can still go home.
Yeah, it's I think it's a multi-layered thing, because it's also the fact that he's a boy. There is a scene where, you know, like, the boys from the neighborhood come to see him, and like, they come to see him, but there's a huge age difference from what we can see. Like, Andy looks like he's an adult and these boys look like they're 12-13, but there's a clear delineation between, you know, boys to men, because he's come back and he's different now. Whether or not there's any supernatural element, that is still true. That still exists.
Yes.
He's different now.
Well, even the postman comes by like, is that Andy? Oh, damn, I didn't know it was Andy. I love the postman in this movie, because he just inserts himself into, like, the family function for the day. He sits down at the picnic table with them. He's like, is that egg salad? Let me just grab a sandwich there. Like, oh, you got any iced tea? And then he starts reminiscing about all his fun war stories about the Korean War or about World War II, and that sets Andy off the fucking edge, because he does not have, like, let's assume that this is the real Andy who came back from the war. He's got no good memories about Korea.
Or
he's,
the only thing we know about it is that he saw his best friend die.
Yeah, even if he is the living Andy, all he's seen in Vietnam is awful shit. But all, like, the entire generation behind him, and I'm talking about, like, a whole generation of men, the people who raised them, came back from World War II or Korea. They were just like, yep, it's what made me the man I am today, and that's what made this country so great. And no one ever said anything bad about the war, even though it totally fucked them up.
And we do not explore mental health or therapy.
Right, exactly. And so he goes insane on this guy, because it's a lie. And, like, the only reason he knows it's a lie is because he's experienced it firsthand. And that's probably what's always so interesting about Vietnam stories, too, is that it's a generation that was willing to say, no, this is wrong, and all that you've told me is a fabrication. And that's also just kind of the experience everybody has when they hit, like, 17, 18.
Yeah, well, and I think there's also that weird feeling of coming to terms with the fact that you think you're the good guy when you go over there.
Yeah.
And then you see how kind of actually... violent and depraved and sometimes outside of the realm of morally good the behavior is. Yeah. Like, there was a lot of, like, raping and kidnapping and inhumane treatment of hostages. You come back and everybody's like, oh, this hero, here's this medal. And you're like,
there's a lot, you know, like I love Vietnam movies and they're all depressing. Every single one of them. And even like the great ones, you know, movies like Taxi Driver, which it's not explicitly a Vietnam movie, but there's no way that Travis Barker, Robert De Niro's character, isn't a PTSD ridden Vietnam vet in some regard. Rolling Thunder, all those movies. It's all about coming back home and like you're just completely fucked and the country has a completely different opinion than you and you're wrong for having that opinion and also like fuck you for asking for help with everything that you're dealing with.
It's like here's your medal and we don't want to hear from you anymore.
And that's if you got a medal. Like that's the other thing too. Like people would come home from World War II and there's a parade. Oh, thank God you're home. We've missed you so much. You step off the plane from Vietnam and everybody's just like, look at this fucking asshole in his dumbass military outfit. And then you get spit on because they're like, you're a baby killer. And you're just like, I didn't want to be there. I truly didn't want to be there. I'm lucky I got out. Everybody I love and know is dead. Like,
Merry Christmas.
Uncle Bob's here to save
but
the
so
day.
There are a lot of levels to this character. And also kind of the paranormal aspect of, is he a zombie? Is he a vampire? Because both of those things are maybe potentially true.
Oh, it's so great. He's living off the blood of the American people. So anyway, the very, 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 very beginning of the movie, before he comes home, we're in the POV. Again, early slasher. Bob knew what the fuck he was doing. Before Halloween, before everything.
Classic Bob.
He was in the killer POV, stalking through, obviously, the Vietnam jungle, and then also up to a truck where he's hitchhiking. This is how he gets home.
Rudely hitchhiking.
He's in a place, you know? Like, even the truck driver recognizes it. Like, because he's in a soldier's uniform, he picks him up, and he's also pretty forgiving over the fact that this kid has not said a goddamn word to him for, like, 5 hours. He does eventually kill the truck driver, though. That's a big no-no. Sorry, bud. That's not how you say thank you for driving me home. The police are investigating this mysterious death, and beyond the fact that he's got his throat slashed open, maybe from an accident, I'm not sure, he's got a very strange little pinprick in his arm, possibly from a syringe. And there's no...
As soon as they said that, me and John were like, shifty eyes at each other, like, what could it be?
I just love the fact that it was one little dot. I was like, what, does he have one vampire tooth? Just like, one little fang? Just for drinking blood? But no, he totally, like, later on, after the doctor who's examining that body makes the connection that this soldier who just recently got home...
And killed a dog.
Killed a dog, told his family that he got home hitchhiking, knowing full well that this truck driver picked up a hitchhiker before dying, is probably responsible for that death. He follows that doctor to his office in an incredible sequence where he kills this doctor and then pulls out a syringe, takes out his blood from his arm. We never see him drink it. We never see him do anything with it.
Yeah, he wraps his arm with a stethoscope.
Oh my God, you're right.
He's
I'm sorry.
Fucking junkie.
I'm so fucking
He's
sorry.
A junkie.
How did I fucking forget that? That he just made like a rude tourniquet with the stethoscope. God, that was a fun little spot. How did
and
I forget that?
The scene actually literally ends with him, like, his head nodding back like he's just injected heroin.
It's a weird little movie.
Like,
man.
Living is, or being back and being human again is a drug. It's something that he's trying to inject into his body.
I love that. It's very Return of the Living Dead, about how eating the brain is all that stops, like, the pain of dying. Like, I could feel this body rot, and the only time that I forget that I'm dead is when I'm eating other people's brains.
I know. How fucking poetic was that funny-looking zombie?
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's weird how much of an art film this movie is, right?
There are a lot of really great lines in this movie.
Oh, man, so many.
Like, it's so poignant.
it ends with, okay, I mean, like, spoiler alert, it ends with Andy burying himself in a shallow grave where there's already a tombstone that's got his name on it.
He's been carving it, though. We've been showing scenes of him at night going to the graveyard and carving something into a tombstone, and we don't know what it's been.
Where the fuck was I? I was just eating popcorn. I guess I was just thinking about the movie. I'm like, the thing about Vietnam movies, you know, I'm gonna make a song with Billy and make it the tequila song. Like, I did too much pre-pro while watching the movie, and then I missed all of these great little spots that thankfully somebody smarter than me, Kim, was there to witness. Okay, so I missed all of that, but the end of the movie is him burying himself in that shallow grave with that gravestone that we've seen him carve over a series of nights, and then Mom is there laying him to rest going, some of our boys just never came home. And it's like, that is so fucking haunting.
No, she said some boys never come home. Like, mine, at least okay. Mine did. Like, hers came home dead.
No, that's not at all what she's saying.
Hers came home dead, but at least he came home.
No, that's not
Yes, that is what she's fucking saying.
No, what she's talking about is that boys come home, but it's not them. That's the whole idea. Even the ones that return, like Jimmy went off to the war and somebody came back with Jimmy's face, but it's not Jimmy. Jimmy's not in there anymore.
I mean, I think that's true, but that's not what she's saying.
Nah, I don't know, man. Like, I think they are taking that, you know, unfortunately classic archetypal story of a Vietnam vet who comes back and is so broken by what he went through that he's a husk of who he used to be, and he's practically a monster now, and he has these fits of rage, and he doesn't know how to fit back into society, and it's as though the war is still going on inside his own mind.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely, obviously, a metaphor that the movie is doing, just kind of in a monsterific way. But I think what's so good about the ending is that Mom doesn't learn anything.
Oh. Poor Mom.
Yeah, like, Mom is unchanged from the beginning to the end, and
you
that's
really
why
think
this
so?
Is a tragedy, because she is even reluctant to help bury him until he is, like, almost gone. He is burying himself, and she's trying to, like, dig him out, and he doesn't want to be here anymore. And
oh,
she
yeah.
is, like, clawing at the dirt, trying to keep him, and then finally she, like, relents. She still has him. He's home. There's a tombstone she can visit, and his body is there. Some boys never come home. Like, I'm still one of the lucky ones.
Ooh, I mean, okay, I like how you're reading it, but I don't know. I still...
So here's some fucking evidence for you. When I was getting the character names for my notes...
Yes.
This is loosely based off the story, The Monkey's Paw. So okay. She's the one that willed him into the world. She's the catalyst for the supernatural events.
Okay.
And she didn't learn anything from curling the paw.
From curling the paw. Okay. Well, art is subjective. And it's in the eye of the beholder. And
but
I think
what
both
you're
right.
saying is also true. Like, yeah. I think
mine is maybe more of a of talking about just like the like Vietnam on film in general, and just like the a generation's opinion of that war. And yours is maybe a little more hyper specific with evidence based solely on what we're talking about today. So sure, you're right.
And as the one that actually watched the movie,
that hurts. That hurts a bit. I did like this movie a lot.
That's okay. In 3 weeks from now, you're going to remember it, and I won't. So,
yeah, who's the real winner here? But yeah, the finale of the movie is great because he is starting to, like, obviously he's getting worse and worse. He's evil. He's killing the family dog. He's killing the doctor because the doctor's learning his secret. He doesn't want anybody to know that he's home, probably because he's fucking dead and he
and
shouldn't
weird.
Be home. And weird. But he starts to fucking rot. Before they're going out on a double date with him, his sister, and their significant others. Like,
why does
they
he
used
agree
to
it? Because he's not keen. Like, he's like, eh.
I think it's because
I could just stay in my rocking chair.
Doesn't he have to go out to feed?
Do you think he agrees? Because he's like, yeah, I guess I'll eat my old girlfriend. Yeah, I guess I could do that.
You gotta eat somebody.
Yeah. Do you think he was gonna eat his sister?
I don't think he had formulated plans to do that. But I think it was only a matter of time.
Yeah, because he is emotionless. Whatever existed of him before, you could almost say that he didn't come back.
Yeah.
Does he have his prior memories? I don't know. Does he care? I don't
right?
think he does.
And that's what's so great about it, because that's what so many families dealt with when their sons came home from the war. Like, they're sitting across the table from these people, and they're just like, I don't recognize this guy. And I don't think he recognizes me. And like that's just a great dynamic for a family dinner, at least on film, not in real life.
Not
that's
in real
truly
life.
Awful. I don't wish that on anybody.
But for art.
Oh, great art.
And you're watching him too the entire time because you want to see if Andy is in there, because yeah. we want to know, like, how much of a monster is he? Like, what are we dealing with here? Mm-hmm. Is he a vampire? Is he a zombie?
Yeah.
Did he actually come back? I was toying with the idea that maybe something possessed him and took his body and brought and like came
oh,
back.
Sure.
Something, because the voice was very weird. It was whispering in an evilly kind of way. And yeah. I know it was twisting the words that the mom was saying, uh-huh. but it sounded very evil. And I was like, okay, maybe there's this spirit in him, and it's literally just his body and he's not in there. And I got no clues. Even when he was on the date with Joanna and she's trying to, like, you know, like, bring up memories, she's like, this is where we had our first hot dog, and
he's like,
yeah, I don't know if he
he doesn't eat food in the whole movie.
I don't know if he remembered. I don't know if he cared. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Because his brain's just not there. Like, he's still in, assuming he's a real person, like, his brain, his entire being is still overseas in the war.
Yeah, because there's still also the potential that this didn't actually literally happen.
Yeah.
And that this is kind of that weird glimpse thing. But he came home because there was a weird time blip, and now we're going back.
That
he didn't
Twilight
come home.
Zone-y
he died.
Yeah, it's a really good finale, though, because they're at the drive-in. It's just a great spot to have a showdown. When he's getting ready to go out, we see that his skin is falling off and he's got maggots.
Like, it looks so good.
It's crazy that he doesn't smell. And not everybody isn't just like, you smell like a dead person, bud. Like, what the fuck?
Andy, you're not so fresh.
But the evil is what keeps the stink away. And he's able to smooch a little bit with Joanna, like, or at least enough that she actually still wants to kiss him. He doesn't smell like a corpse yet. And when his sister and her boyfriend go off to get popcorn, he starts eating Joanna's face, basically.
Because she sees the, like, rot dripping down
oh
his face,
God,
and
so
then, like,
gross.
She gets terrified of him, and he's like, well, we better shut this down.
Yeah, it's a really haunting image, because it's shot like they're making out, and they're, you know, just laying down in the
telling
back seat.
Telling secrets in the back seat.
Yeah, but he's totally just, like, strangling her, and he's gonna eat her face. It's wicked. The whole setup in the drive-in's gross, though, right? Like, just the idea that
just the fact that the two couples in the car are related. Like,
yeah.
That's
and
weird.
That this is, like, a thing they used to do all the time.
Yeah, that's
they're
weird.
At the drive-in. They're just like, well, it's playing tonight. And it's like, I mean, who actually watches the movie? Am I right, Andy? And
well, one of
like,
you
yes,
go to the fucking swing set. Like, don't both be in the car.
They at least give them a little bit of privacy. But the assumption is that they're all four of them are in the car making out.
I don't
like
it.
I don't want to do that with my brother or
no,
sister.
I don't
that's
like
not
that.
Gonna
I don't like
no,
it.
No, thank you.
No.
And when they get back, he's gone full berserker mode. And he's like a crazy zombie now. He's got zombie eyes.
Well, yeah, he can't hide it now because the glass glasses are somewhere in the back seat, and he's full spook show.
Yeah, his eyes are so fucked. He's got, it's like his gums have decayed, and he's like all teeth. There's blood everywhere. He looks so fucking cool.
And crispy.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, he looks both dry and wet.
I think it's the promo image on Shudder for, like, the Canadian horror subgenre that they have. Like, they have the occasional collection. I swear one of them is like, it came from the north, even which though this is clearly not a Canadian movie.
And Bob Clark isn't Canadian, he just lived in Canada for a while.
I know, right? Like, he made Black Christmas, he made A Christmas Story, we were like, he's Canada's own, Bob Clark! Oh, man, what a great origin story for Uncle Bob. Yeah, I like this movie a lot. Especially, so he runs off. This is where it kind of becomes like the Pitchfork territory, Universal Monster stuff, where he's just the monster in town that everybody's after. They finally, they're running him out.
Well, he did run over, but.
He did run over somebody at the drive-in. I think it was his sister's boyfriend. Or no, it was just somebody else that saved his sister.
Yeah, because he tried to run
drive-in.
Over her.
Yeah, he tried to run over a few people at the drive-in. And the whole town's rising up. He makes his way back home. Mom's protecting him. They get back in the car.
Dad kills himself.
Like, he's like, I know what you did, son, and I'm in your childhood bedroom with all your childhood ephemera around, but you've got to be stopped.
Oh, man, the Scooby-Doo light switch broke my heart.
Yeah, he can't bring himself to do it, so while Mom is sort of like ushering him at the house before that entire wave of angry community come by to rip his head off. Dad blows his brains out in the bedroom. Sucks. But the best part...
It was the best ending for Dad, though, because he loved that dog. It was over for him the second that dog died.
That's the other... So I...
There were framed photos of the dog in the background throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, and so there's something I want to ask you about that, too, because there's also a lot of dialogue between Mom and Dad about how much Dad loved his son and about how he kind of hoped that his son would die in the war because then he could just be this martyr for the family a little bit, and it'd just be like, oh, my boy died for our country, like that classic American
guy. I don't know
if
we had enough time to go there.
No, I agree, but we get like 18 years of arguments in 3.5 minutes between Mom and Dad. And
yeah, because they, really, they descent very fast.
She's really taking him to task on some stuff, and it's just not, like, there's three seasons of character development there, then we're just getting the bullet points of it. So it doesn't all perfectly land, but you can't deny that Dad's way more torn up about that dog dying than his son. Now, we only get a glimpse of his reaction to the news that his son is dead, but he's out drinking his sorrows away. He's telling everybody he can that this dog is dead. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself now that my dog is gone.
To counterpoint, though, after the doctor tells him that, you know, like, this goes beyond the scope of that oath that I did, I have to tell the police that your son is definitely the hitchhiker killer.
Yeah.
He gets ahead of the story. Yes. He goes to the cops. And we're like, oh, fuck, he's going to tattle on his boy because that boy ain't right. And he doesn't. He makes up a lie.
Yeah, I know.
I saw the doc the night before.
He said he was meeting some totally different veteran.
From a different town entirely. Definitely not my son who came home the same day.
Yeah. I know. I mean, you could make an argument that it would just look bad on him if his son was seen as a murderer, because then he would be the father of a murderer and like, oh, you must have fucked up raising that boy.
Yeah, I guess
I'm extrapolating on that a little
bit. The movie, I am on the dad's side because the mom is, her behavior is bonkers.
Yeah.
And her just overlooking everything is just too much for me. I'm like, no, you're not doing this right.
I think there is something, though, about how much we have Dad wallowing over the death of the dog. And maybe that's partly him sort of grieving the loss of his son anyway, because like clearly that's not his son anymore. Like, it looks like his son.
Oh, that's good.
It has his son's face. So like
the dog?
he thinks he's broken up about the dog, and he is, but part of it, it's also just that even though he came home, my son is dead. Like, that's just how it is.
That's good.
But,
no, I like
but
that.
I do like to take the darker tone, where it's just like, he definitely likes this dog more than he liked his son, but, you know. Whatever.
Yeah, but that could also be explaining the fact that he kind of transplanted the emotions he had for his son while his son was gone onto this dog.
That's possible.
Because he did have two children.
Oh, so it's, yeah, okay, so the sun's gone, but don't worry, Chester, you're gonna be my Andy now.
There is also that weird scene where the sister is trying to reason with the dad because she doesn't know what's going on, and mom's behaving weird, and dad's drunk, and he, like, pushes her across the room, and you're like, wow, you are clearly not the favorite child.
Right, he comes up drunk, he's like, daddy's expecting a very important phone call, you go fuck him, you watch this phone for me, you come get me, I'll be in my closet drinking. Like, I don't even know where he is, he's like, maybe in the closet, maybe in the attic, just looking at photos. Albums, drinking an entire bottle of scotch, just like, we had it so good, you know. It's sad. It's real. It's real, real sad.
Yeah, this is a fucking dark movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a anti-Vietnam movie through and through. But it's also just a great little maybe vampire, maybe zombie movie, you know?
Yeah, so what do you think? Let's kind of make a decision here. What is he? Is he a vampire?
Is he a vampire or is he a zombie?
Why? But why?
Can't he just be a ghoul? Yeah, can't we just, okay, can we just call ghoul. Him a Yuletide ghoul and leave it at that?
Okay, with no Yuletide. He's a ghoul. I like that.
It's Christmas time,
the,
baby.
The drug choice is such an idea, though.
Well, I mean, they all came home junkies, you know? Like, either they got hooked on heroin while they were in Vietnam, or they came back and that was the only thing that made the voices, the dreams, and all the bad thoughts go away.
Mm.
Like, that's the other thing. It's just like, they had psychosis, and then they got
and they weren't getting treatment for PTSD at all.
No, there was nothing. They were just like, hey man, I think maybe what you should do is just like go hang out with some other Vietnam vets, slap each other on the back, have a beer, and then, I don't know, put on a brave face for the next 70 years. Like, that was essentially all anybody did. Like, that's the extent of our post-war treatment. And I mean, it's better now, but I mean, it's pretty much basically the same.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel better.
Oh.
So ghoul then.
happy holidays. Yeah, I just like to say ghoul. I don't know.
Ghoul is such a good word.
I love the image of him taking the blood and injecting it like he's a junkie, but he seems more zombie-ish than anything else.
When he starts rotting, he really does.
You know, that's a dead giveaway.
The fact vampires are usually more sexy.
Going back to his own grave and everything's fun. I really like at the end where the car's on fire. I love a car on fire.
Also, just the idea of mom driving away from the cops with a car on fire.
But he's in the passenger seat going like, turn left, over here. Right? He's like pointing her like, where do I go now? And he's like, oh, you want to crash into that gate over there.
Graveyard.
Yeah. It's a good movie. It's, yeah, again, depressing, but not a surprise when you watch this and knowing what you know about Black Christmas, because, like, Black Christmas, not a feel-good movie.
And also answers even less.
Yeah, Bob Clark's just like, you know what?
Fuck your answers.
Fuck answers, yeah. All we're left with in this life are questions. Even Christmas Story, like, A Christmas Story, doesn't really have an ending. It's just like, it just stops.
That's so true. It's just over.
The whole movie builds toward Christmas Day, and then we get to Christmas Day, we have Christmas night, and you're just like, I don't feel like there's an ending to this story. Credits. Okay, cool. Let's watch it again. Yeah, whatever.
All right, so what is your rating going to be for Death Dream? I was going to say, should I say Dead of Night? I like Dead of Night better, but okay. Your explanation for Death Dream was pretty good.
You go ahead and rate Dead of Night, and I'll rate Death Dream. How's that sound? I'm going to give Death Dream... It's tough. I think I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, like it's a 3.5 out of 4 good, but like it's not the most fun movie. It made me very uncomfortable.
Sure.
So I'm going to go with a 3 out of 4.
I'm also 3 out of 4. I really
that laughing,
I really dug it.
I had to get up out of my seat because of that laughing scene. Yeah. I was like, I need a break from whatever the fuck that was.
I got to go get some fresh air.
I was like, I need some popcorn.
Yeah, so 3 out of 4 from the both of us. Perfect. Christmas holiday movie for Mr. Bob.
You're
Clark.
Really trying to sell the Christmas hat.
I have to keep bringing it up, otherwise there's nothing else. Like, nothing that we've talked about. It's just like, oh, and then that scene where they're caught under the mistletoe. Like, there's nothing Christmas about this, but it is a family tale, and there's nothing more... Man, there's like, it's... When you think about America, if you take out a couple weird things like war, you mostly just think of, like, apple pies, family get-togethers, and both of those are Christmas. You know what I mean? Like, despite the fact that Christmas was not invented in America, they really adopted it for themselves. Like, this is ours. The Thanksgiving and Christmas, that's us.
Well, and you think of the Griswoldiness of it, like the good old American family. Like, you have the grandparents over for dinner, you have the Christmas tree, you decorate your house. That's all part of the American dream. That's the nuclear family. That's the perfect little photo.
Oh, it has to look perfect from the outside. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what time of year does it look more perfect than Christmas?
Put snow all over those sadness.
And in keeping with the variety.
I'm like, okay, what are you doing? You have a book open.
And so in keeping with the variety show setup that we have going for Uncle. Welcome back from commercial break, everybody. You're tuning back into Bob Clark's Creepy Christmas Spooktacular, and our final segment here on the program is a little cocktail pairing. So if you're planning on watching Death Dream / Dead of Night at home this holiday season, we recommend you try The Home for the Holidays. It's a holiday take on The Undead Gentleman, which any cocktail fan out there will already know is kind of a mix between The Corpse Reviver and The Zombie, which are definitely definitely a perfect cocktail for a movie like Death Dream. Now, of course, The Undead Gentleman serves straight up, no ice. You're going to keep this in a chilled coupe or tall glass, depending on your garnish. Okay, so you want to chill that glass.
You're going to put this in the show notes, right?
I guess I should, yeah. Otherwise, like, no one's going to remember all this. But yeah, you know, the classic Undead Gentleman comes with a 1/2 ounce of lime juice, 1/2 ounce of grapefruit juice. But for a Christmas twist, I would throw in some cranberries as well. Mash those suckers up before you muddle everything together. Of course, you need a little bit of cinnamon syrup to taste. Falernum helps, and that's kind of what makes this a little bit of a tiki drink. You can omit it if you like. Maybe just put a little extra cinnamon syrup in there because it is a little bit of a sweet. An ounce of black rum, 1.5 ounces of blended rum, and then you're gonna mix that all together. And you can garnish with a mint traditionally, but if you want a little extra holiday kick, I would throw a little bit of rosemary in there. Make sure you just give it a nice little clap in your hand before you drop it in the cup. You want to get that rosemary aroma out on the nose before you take a sip. Rinse your cup with a little bit of absinthe as well before you drop your garnish in there. Strain that all into your cup, no ice, and that's your home for the holidays. Which I wish I had a creepier title for. Especially, I'm like, it's based on this zombie drink and this zombie drink, and here's a Christmas cocktail.
I like The Undead Gentleman. I think that's a very classy name.
Mm-hmm. And that's it for the first half of Bob Clark's Creepy Christmas Spooktacular. We'll be back next week. Obviously, we're talking about Black Christmas.
And it's actually going to be Christmas themed.
It's going to actually be a Christmas themed holiday episode. We're going to keep that variety show fever going. I've got another musical number from Billy prepared, looking to see what he's coming up with. And
great.
Of course, Kim's got a surprise segment that she hasn't told us about
what?
Yet, but she's putting together. We'll see what she's cooking up over there on her side
God.
Of the table. Of course, you can let us know what you thought of Dead of Night / Death Dream over on social media at Nightmare on Film Street or NOFS Podcast. Just search for either of those wherever you talk to people and you'll probably find us. We recommend Discord, which you can find in the show notes at NOFSpodcast.com/Discord.
Until next time, I'm Kim.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, NOFSpodcast.com. Until next time. Stay creepy, fiends.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.